Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peep State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peep State Pandemonium.
Thursday night, 8 o'clock Eastern Time means time for Peep State Pandemonium. Bo James here with Jerry Oates, and we've got a very special caller to start with tonight, Jerry. We've got Michael Norris here.
He's one of the best
talkers. I am too. Let's get him on right away. You're with us, Mr. Norris?
I am here. Where's Mr. Simmons?
He has not called in yet.
Hopefully he and Charlie didn't get locked up. You know, they run a risk of that every time they go out to Las Vegas together. Last year, I think it was, they landed and the FBI got on the plane. And Charlie was looking for a place to hide up under one of the airplane seats. He thought they were after him.
Here's Mr. Simmons now. Let me get him on here. Mr. Simmons, the office has told me to fine you $40 for being late.
Son, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to stay with y'all. Debbie woke me up and said it's after 8 o'clock. I am just absolutely exhausted. How are you
well,
guys?
We're doing good. We got Jerry on here. We got Michael on here. We're glad you made it back from Las Vegas.
We had a good time. It's fun 5 days, but... If I ever let Charlie Smith book my itinerary again, somebody just shoot me and put me out of my misery. Oh, jeez. We left Vegas at 6 o'clock their time this morning. We didn't even go to bed last night. And I'm not equipped for this anymore.
How was the trip home today?
Trip home was good. Had a good trip home. I was so tired. I got on a plane this morning. I told Charlie when we landed, I don't even remember taking off this morning. I went to sleep as soon as I sat down and then woke up just before we landed here in Atlanta.
Well, having witnessed you sleep, did they take your snoring as being some sort of engine trouble?
I really don't know. They didn't throw me off, so I guess it was okay.
Well, guys, I won't take up much time. I just wanted to come on here and thank everybody for all the cards, letters, emails, Facebook messages, text messages, phone calls that I have gotten from everybody from the last over the last 6 weeks. And I tell you, it has been a tremendous boost to me. Some people I want to thank personally, or over and above all that were there with me from the minute this started. Scrappy McGowan, Charlie Smith, Randy Corin, Bo, you and Misty, and of course my big brother there, Bobby Simmons. You guys were with me at both hospitals the night that all this happened, and if you guys hadn't been there, there would have been no way I would have made it through. But as reality started to set in that night, and if you guys hadn't been there just sitting beside me, I don't know what I would have done. And I can't, words can't express how grateful I am for all of you guys. To those that managed to make it to either one or both of my family services, my parents' services. Again, Charlie, Randy, my friend Elliot Wiggins, Cowboy Bob Kelly, Bill Bowman, Joe Turner, Bill Sayer, Roberto Soto, and again, this time he's not only my big brother but my pastor, Bobby, who did both of those services. I can't express to you what that meant. And Bobby has, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but Bobby has now been adopted by the rest of my family. I adopted him several years ago, but now the rest of my family has absolutely fallen in love with him. And There again, I don't know if that's a good thing or not, Bobby. So. But I just, this has been an unbelievable thing for me. I've gotten my parents at rest, and they're taken care of, and now I'm just sitting and playing the waiting game of waiting for the courts to do whatever they've got to do, go through whatever probate I've got to go through so I can settle my parents' estate and so I can go back to work. The circus has been wonderful. Brian Green and Juanita Timms have been my spokespeople for the circus. They've been letting everybody know what's going on with me because I talk to them in some form or fashion at least once a week. I've talked to Ronnie West several times. But the circus has ensured me that my job is safe, that whenever I get through this, I can go right back to work. So I'm just hoping, I had hoped to be on the verge of that happening, but right now I'm just playing a waiting game. I've got an attorney who is a friend of the family who is helping me through all this, but as of yet nothing has been settled, so I can't do anything until the courts name me manager of the estate, executor, whatever the term they deem for it. So I really can't do anything. I have settled, dealt with all the utilities and everything at the house. Still in the process of dealing with the insurances and getting all that settled. And I've informed everybody in Social Security, both, you know, my father's retirement and stuff like that, of their passing and everything, and have dealt with that. But right now I'm sitting in a hotel room. It's a nice hotel room, but it's still just a hotel room. And been here for 6 weeks. I told Bo earlier today when we talked, I'm not used to 6 weeks in a hotel room. Four I can deal with, but it's time for me to move on. But unfortunately, I can't do anything until all this is settled legally, or at least it's started. I'm hoping they'll, whatever appearances, whatever signatures, whatever they need from me, I can get done and get back on the road and handle everything else remotely. The insurance company has assured me that I can't with them. It's just as far as what the courts, Alabama courts, will do. So I'm just sitting here waiting. Some days are better than others. You have too much time on your hands, and we've all been through this. You got too much time on your hands, you start thinking too much, and you just, you know, I've been through every emotion from guilt to sadness to questioning, you know, how this happened, why it happened, you know. But I can say through my good friends, and Jerry, I don't mean to leave you out too, because a couple conversations you and I have had, I know you've been thinking about me and been there for me as well.
No doubt.
The friends, family, all three of my families, my actual family, my circus family, my wrestling family have all been here, and it's been it's given me strength, but mainly my faith in God is what's pulled me through this and will continue. I have no idea what the future is going to bring, but I know it'll be better than what the past was. So I'm you know, just looking forward to that. I just, like I said, I want to take a few minutes to thank everybody. And I listened to last week's show, and the guy you guys were talking about from Calhoun, his name was Bill Walker, that had the Bears. And he used the name Rip Tyler, which caused a lot of heat with Dean Vaughn, who was the original Rip Tyler. So they had their clashes along the way. And Bill had a son named Ricky Walker who wrestled under the name of Johnny Dollar, I guess up around Tennessee, North Georgia, whatever. But as I was looking into this, I found a newspaper article where Ricky was in Chicago in 1992 and got arrested for illegally having bear matches in a bar. They arrested the bar owner, the bar manager, and him, and locked him up in jail for having bear matches illegally. But another story from that you guys didn't get a chance to touch on was, and I don't know, Jerry, Bobby or Jerry, if you guys have ever heard about this or not, it happened in October of 70. Jean Dubois or Dave McKigney had terrible death, and he was in Valdosta. I don't know who was running. I don't know if it was one of Fred's shows or if it was an outlaw or what it was. But he was offering $1,500 to anybody that could pin the bear. Well, this guy, local from around Valdosta, who was a big construction worker, weighed about 350 pounds. His name was Ed Williams. And he said he wanted to wrestle the bear. So Gene wouldn't let him do it, though, because he said the bear had been in a bad mood all afternoon, and he was very ornery and everything, and he was afraid that they might have an accident. So he wouldn't let the guy work with the bear. So the guy, you know, went to the sheriff and said that they were running a scam with this bear and everything. So they went down. They didn't arrest Gene or his wife who was with him. They arrested the bear and locked the bear up for 3 days until Gene could come up with a $3,000 bail. And I think they paid the bear, got him in his traveling cage, and they headed back to Canada. And I doubt very seriously they got anywhere near Valdosta, Georgia after that.
Well, only in the wrestling business can a bear get arrested.
Was that the guy called Bear Man?
Yeah.
Yeah, right,
for
him.
You teamed with him in Detroit. I sent you a picture of you and him working against Bob and Saruta.
And then I worked for him up in London, Ontario.
Right. He ran his own thing.
He had a bear that killed one of his wives.
Yeah, a girlfriend or something. Yeah, girlfriend. He was doing something with him and left the bear cage open and went to answer the phone. And the bear got out of the cage and went in the house, and the best thing that they could ever determine was the girl was having her period, and it caused the bear to react the way it did, and it mauled her and killed her. And
I got a wife that can be a bear sometimes. Does that count for anything?
I got one of them, too. Yeah, he's the one that actually had to kill the bear. He had to kill the bear to get it, because he tried to pull his wife away, and the bear went after him, too.
Right. And
he had to shoot the bear.
And they took Ted away from him, too, at that point. Terrible Ted was the bear that was in Valdosta, and that was his most famous bear. I don't know if it was the same one, but he had a Terrible Ted for most of the 60s and 70s, and I would imagine it was the same bear. And they took all of his bears away from him at that point. I don't think he... That happened in 79. He died in 84, but I don't know if he was still using bears or working with bears when he was killed.
Now, was this Tuffy Truesdale, or is this another guy?
No. Tuffy and Nick Adams had bears together, but they were out of Cherokee, North Carolina.
Yeah, right. He went to Cherokee, and he saw... This was after he had retired from the business, and he said Tuffy was working a deal up there in Cherokee, right there on the little strip.
Yeah,
he had a bear up there.
When you go in the Welcome Center, that bear is in there stuffed. It's one of the first things you see when you go in Cherokee.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, his most famous bear was Victor.
Okay.
Yeah, and they traveled all over the place. Now, Dubois, well, his real name was Dave McKigney. He was from Toronto, and that's where he lived. And he, like Jerry said, he had his own little territory that he ran up there. A lot of guys that worked for the Sheik, when they'd get mad with the Sheik or when he went out of business, they would go up there and work with Dave.
Wasn't he the guy that was driving when the wreck with Adrian Adonis and the Kelly twins?
Yes. Yes.
And then, he got killed in that wreck, too.
He was killed in that car wreck, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They ran off a cliff, I think, is what it was they did.
Yeah, a moose came out in front of him, and he tried to go around the moose and went down the ravine.
Well, it probably wouldn't have fared any better had they hit that moose.
No.
I think they were probably goners either way. But anyway, guys, I won't take up any more of your time. And Bo, I thank you. You're doing a great job. I couldn't have handpicked a better person to take my place. But don't get too comfortable.
No, I got about 6 more weeks, and I'm making a split myself.
I know. I'll say that right now. Whether I'm back on the road or not, when you get ready to go to Wyoming, I'll be back in place. So we'll just tag right back out and make it work. But I miss doing this show, guys. But right now, my head is not. I hope you understand. My head is not in the place it needs to be with everything else that's going on. Like I said, some days I have good days. Some days I have days I don't even want to get out of bed.
Well, that's understandable.
Yeah.
But and let me say this about Jerry Oates and his kayfabe and this illness. He just didn't want to come on the show last week and put over the McGuire twins. That's what it was.
Listen, I got no business being on here tonight.
I hear you. Well, and for those of you who have not seen Jerry Oates in action with the Tybee Island Police Department, go on Facebook. There's a picture of Jerry driving a scooter, and he's got a posse with him that look like they average weight about 300 pounds. And I guess they're coyote hunting. I don't know what they're doing on the
beach. No, we had a big shindig down there last Saturday. You got no idea what that was about.
But you look right at home behind the wheel of that ATV.
Yes,
sir.
I did. They let me be the wheel man.
If anybody robs a bank in Savannah and the getaway driver is driving an ATV, we'll know who to go in. Well, guys, thank you very much. I appreciate the time you've given me, and I love you guys, and I miss all of
you.
Well,
we love you, Mike.
We'll be back in place soon, hopefully, and just keep up the thoughts and prayers for me, because I'm still desperately in need of them, Mike, because I'm wandering around in a fog until somebody finally points me in the right direction of what I'm going to do down here. But I'm ready to get out of Mobile, Alabama. I miss the circus, and I'm ready to hit the road. But unfortunately, it is what it is. So as soon as I am able to do anything, I'll let you guys know. But again, thanks so much, Bo. Thank you for the great job you're doing. And, I will talk to you guys later.
All right, you know how to get hold of us, Michael.
Oh, yeah. You guys take care.
See you, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
All righty. We're going to keep it a short show here tonight because Blog Talk has sent me a message here. They're having trouble, too, but we're going to try to do an hour. That way we can give everybody some rest that needs it because Jerry's still battling his illness, and Charlie Smith has wore Bobby Simmons out. So.
Yes. I got two messages before we get too carried away from Mr. Oates here, and if I don't forget, I'll get carried away and forget them. Number one, your buddy Mr. Geigel said, make sure I tell you hello.
Good.
And also Bill Carson said, tell you hello.
That's wonderful. I appreciate that.
What a remarkable voice. I mean, he's 80-something years old. He can barely walk, but the voice is still very strong. And also,
he was a heck of a man. He was a heck of a guy.
I run into a guy this year that I had not seen in it's been 25 or 30 years. He has not changed one bit, and he drugged me out. We talked, I mean, for 3 days, me and him talked at least an hour a day, and he told me to tell you, he said, I'm going to haunt you if you don't tell Jerry Oates. I said, hello. Akio Sato.
Are you kidding me?
Son, he, honest to goodness, he could put on a pair of trunks and work today.
Where's he living, Bobby?
He's living in Kansas City. He's driving a truck for FedEx. He drives a tractor trailer for FedEx.
Is he still married to Betty Nicolai?
As far as I know, we talked about family. I mean, he didn't talk about any divorce or anything. He just, what a super, super guy he is. You know, he's funny.
Sato was a great guy, man.
You know, and he said that he was trained by Baba, and he worked for Baba for years. You know, he was a talent coordinator. Nobody knew that. He was a talent coordinator. He was lining up the guys to go work over there. And when he got out of the business here, he moved back over there. He told me, he said they were paying him almost $7,000 a week to train guys over there. But he said his family was here, and he said he had to make a choice. He said he came back over here and he said he went to school, got a job, learned how to drive a truck, and he said he likes it because, you know, he's on the road and he kind of works his own little schedule, and now he's at a point where he works, you know, he's at home every night, and he just, but honestly, he looks great. He told me, he said, how come Ted and Jerry don't come out here? He said, I'd love to see them. I said, we can't get them out of Savannah and Macon to Atlanta. I don't know what to tell you. But he said, make sure I told you hello.
Well, I certainly appreciate that because I thought the world of him.
Super.
I knew he went back to Japan. That's why I asked you.
Yeah.
I knew he was living there in Kansas City, and I knew he went back, but I didn't know he had come back.
No, he is. He's living in Kansas City, driving for FedEx.
I was wondering for a while what happened to him.
He was a working son of a gun.
Yeah,
Tennessee for 2.5 years, I guess. 86, most 86, 87, into 88, he was here in Tennessee for Jarrett's.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Akil Sato. He was so funny. Yeah, Baba loved him, man.
Who else was out there, Bobby?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, there was not as many of the boys out there this year there was a lot more fans than there were boys this year. But Butcher Vachon was there. He's there every year. He's looking well. The new guys that I've seen this year, Rob Van Dam was there. First time I'd ever met him. I met Edge last night. A guy that worked for Vince. What a great kid. I mean, I was just very, very impressed with him.
What's he doing, Bobby?
He's working. He's doing a TV series on the Sci-Fi Network. You know, he hurt his neck. He'll never work again. I mean, they told him, you know, if you work, you're taking a risk of, being paralyzed for the rest of your life. So he said last night, he said, there's no truth to any rumors. He said, I'm not coming back. He's in great shape. He looks good. He is actually, his girlfriend is Beth Phoenix, the girl that works for Vince. And I met her. She was with him. And, just a great kid. Great kid. Very, very down to earth. They gave him a special award last night, and he was just super nice. Jim Ross was there. Ivan Koloff got the Iron Mike Mazurki Award this year. Ivan, of course, in pretty bad shape. Too many bumps, too many chair shots. I mean, he's very smart. I mean, he's very, very sharp. You know, he's still with it. He just physically, he's just been beat down over the years. Jake the Snake Roberts was there last night to receive an award. It was presented to him by Diamond Dallas Page. Jake Roberts, the first time I've seen him sober, maybe the first time I've ever seen him sober.
He looks clean. Good. The pictures I've seen of him, he looks really good.
He looks good. He was very forthright and honest in his acceptance speech last night of his award. He said, I made some bad choices in my lifetime. And he said, this is not the end. He said, this is not the beginning. He said, this is just the next day and the next chapter, and we're moving on and we're doing it clean and sober. He's lost a bunch of weight. He looks good. He had three of his kids with him last night. And they were all very emotional over, you know, in his speech. And it was very, very good to see him. Dick Byer, the Destroyer, was there. Bob Kelly and, of course, his wife Chris from Mobile was out. It's just and I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out that you know, was normally there, but there was a lot that normally came that were not there last night.
The Funks there?
None of the Funks were there last night, this year. But Ricky Steamboat was there last night. Another guy that I met last night that I had met a couple of years ago, but just an interesting guy to talk to, is Leo Burke, Canadian guy.
Oh, wow.
He was there. Les Thatcher was out. Bill White, Al Friend, the manager from the Kansas City Midwest area. We had a great time. It's a unique thing to go to because you do have the fans there, and it's just anytime two of the guys start talking, you get 100 fans gathering around thinking they're going to hear some great trade secret or guys snapping pictures or something. But it is what it is. It's just a big fan fest. But also a very emotional thing last night. David asked me about Bill Moody. They had two of Bill's friends from Mobile accept his award last night, his Luthez Award, and that was another very emotional acceptance speech. And poor Bill, he made his acceptance speech in Mobile. For those of us that were at the Mobile reunion this year, Bill was so grateful and so honored that they had recognized him. But he just tough him not being there last night. But had a good time. But spending 5 days with Charlie Smith is it'll make an emotional wreck out of a good person. And I am what I am, so I'm just shot.
It put you on the nervous medicine, won't it?
Oh, I can tell you, Bobby Simmons, you're a glutton for punishment.
let me get the break out of the way, and then when we come back, we'll talk for 30 or 40 minutes here, and we'll talk about the people behind the scenes that do not get enough credit for what they did to keep the territories running, to make sure the towns are running, and making sure the boys had somewhere to work. I'll be right back after this commercial.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows, to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Here on Peach State Pandemonium, Bobby Simmons, Jerry Oates, and Bo James, and I want to talk tonight about the unsung heroes of the territories, the people that never got the credit for what they did. And the first guy I want to talk about is one that we all know, in Ronnie West. Ronnie gets all the credit in the world, and he deserves it as being one of the absolute best referees that ever was in our profession. But he does not get nearly the credit for the stuff that he did behind the scenes, making sure the towns are running, the publicity was out, TVs were delivered to the stations, and just everything else day to day. And I think that, you know, his track record speaks for itself, because you look at all the different offices that he worked for over his time. of working in the business.
Yeah, people have no idea what's involved. And the main people that never got any credit was the Marine crews.
Yeah, that's...
they never got any credit.
I was going to get to that here in a minute when I talk about Ed Sandberg here in Knoxville that did it from Kazana all the way through Fullers. I mean, he made sure the ring was in the town, set up, safe to work in. And Ronnie did that. Bob Polk did that, too, here. They made sure the stuff was there. But in our own Bobby Simmons here, people don't realize the stuff that he had to go through day after day of just trying to make sure the machine was still rolling and all the gears were greased.
It takes a lot to keep it rolling. People have no idea.
You're talking about Ronnie West. Ronnie never got the credit he deserved in the Atlanta office, for sure. You know, there was weeks upon weeks that Ole, as the booker, never graced the office. Me and Ronnie were in the office every day, and Ronnie was responsible for he was Ole's right hand man, and a lot of times Ole would leave it up to Ronnie to book the smaller towns, not per se put the talent in place, but to make sure that the finishes got to the towns, to make sure that the guys knew where they were supposed to be, what they were supposed to be doing, and just a lot of that little stuff that people take for granted, just being in the towns. You know, Ronnie put in 6-7 hours a day at the office and then climb in his car and drive to the town, wherever that was, and whether he refereed or was just there to make sure that everything ran well. I mean, it was just he was as much a part of the great run Georgia Championship Wrestling had as Ole was or any of those bookers, because Ronnie was here through a lot of bookers. He was the one constant when in an ever-changing rotating door of bookers through here for a while, for several years.
It's the same thing in Alabama for Fuller. I mean, he did the same thing over there with Continental.
Did the same thing. But, you know, Bill, you know, after his run here in Georgia kind of ended you know, over the course, anybody that worked for Ole for any length of time, especially those that were closest to him, Tom Ernesto told me something when I first started refereeing, and I didn't understand it at the time, but he looked at me and he said, "Bobby, always remember this." He said, "Familiarity breeds contempt." He said, "The closer you are to somebody, the more they're going to yell at you, the more they care about you, the more problems you're going to have as far as getting along with them is concerned." And whether that's brothers or people you work with or people that are married, you know, at times when somebody needs to scream at somebody and you're the only one there, you catch the brunt of it. But after he would leave here, he went to work for Bill Watts. And Ronnie's purpose for Bill Watts was not so much to referee but to go to the towns to see that things were running like they were supposed to. And there was a couple of guys for Bill Watts that had been running for Bill Watts, that Bill Watts trusted, that had been running for years, and Ronnie went in there and found out that some of the money wasn't making it back to where it was supposed to go. And, you know, I mean, just he was just that kind of guy. You ask him to take care of it, and he followed through on it.
Yeah. And it's, you imagine without him how things could have fell apart so fast at places that he was at.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And just making sure that the tapes got to the TV stations.
Yep.
And the boys knew which towns to be in. You know, yep. And then, as Jerry said, the ring crew, the men that hauled the ring to the towns, I mean, Charlie McGowan and Randy and Ed Sandberg up here and Buddy Wayne and the Memphis End. And, I mean, if it wasn't for them, there wouldn't have been any towns running. The ring wouldn't have been there.
Thank you.
And the boys wouldn't have made the first dollar that day.
It was a production now. It really was. You talking about doing it 6-7 nights a week? Come on.
Having been a guy that drove the ring truck for a lot of years and took care of the rings, you knew you were doing a good job, or you knew you were doing your job well when nobody ever complained about it, because guys took it for granted. I can't speak for a lot of places. I know here in Georgia we were very blessed. I took a lot of pride in taking care of the rings when I had them, and so did Charlie McGowan. And there was a guy that worked with him named Franklin Head that everybody called Red. and Randy Corbin. I mean, we took a lot of pride in the rings and the way they looked and the way the people they worked, and you were doing a good job when nobody complained.
And had to keep them repaired too, you know.
Oh yeah, but you know, order new mat canvas. I mean, and that was another thing too. A lot of this stuff that people did, you know, it was not general knowledge. Like nobody, I mean, if you ask somebody, well, where do you order a mat cover from, or how do you repair a rope that breaks? You know, a lot of people didn't know this stuff. They just said, hey, it just, I don't know. Speaking of the, Les Thatcher sat at our table for a couple of events at Cauliflower Alley. We got in a conversation, and I brought Jerry's name up because I'd heard Jerry say this many times. I brought up the fact that Jerry was talking about that ring in St. Louis, how bad it was. And Thatcher said, you can't believe how bad it was. You know.
And that never made any sense to me, Bobby.
But no. I mean, everybody I've ever talked to said that it was absolutely the best wrestling town in the United States of America.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt, without a doubt.
And they said that it was just absolutely horrible. Thatcher was telling me, I asked him, I was just, here again, the fan in me, I'm picking his brain as we were sitting there talking. I asked him if he ever worked the Chase when they had the table set up and the, you know, you seen the people in the tuxedos and the gowns, and I mean, it was just a, you know, and I asked him about that, and he said back when they did that, he said the ring inside that ballroom at the Chase they used had velvet ropes. He said they were as worthless as if you'd have had string up there because they were made for looks and not for actually what they were designed to do. But he said it was just the way it was back then. He said the ring was hard as a rock and just, you know.
Yeah. Could you imagine after working that St. Louis ring every night?
Oh, everybody be in the hospital now.
Yeah.
Hips replacements, knee replacements, shoulder replacements. Somebody should have taken Sam and slammed him in it one time.
Joe Turner, I believe it was Joe Turner, told me he took a backdrop in that ring when he first went up there. And he said that when he hit, he said he just laid there. And he was whoever was working with him, are you all right? And he said, well, I'm just trying to figure that out.
It was death, man.
Oh.
Jerry, in Kansas City, who took care of the ring out there? Who made sure the publicity was out in the towns there?
Well, the ring was taken care of by a guy named Frank Diamond. And out there, it wasn't like here in Georgia. I mean, you had to worry about the elements out there.
Yeah.
But that ring always showed up. I mean, you would have just snowstorms and blizzards and ice, but he would, you know, he just knew that weather and he'd leave in plenty of time. We never went to a show, there wasn't a ring there. And in the office, you had Geigel and O'Connor, and I think Geigel did most of it.
Yeah. The jumps out there too, hauling the ring in Kansas was not easy because the towns are, you know, 100 miles apart or more. Every one of there's no close towns there.
Oh man, I mean, please! It's those towns were, and you know, and all those towns, the rings were brought in. None of them had, you know, permanent rings anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. But we had some trips out there.
How many rings did they have in Georgia, Bobby?
Oh, we were blessed here. Most of the major buildings, most of the regular towns had their own ring.
Yeah.
Part of when Barnett hired me, part of my job when I first came to work was to go to all of the major towns and redo the rings. Just check them out, make sure if it had broke boards or whatever that, you know, we replaced and took care of. But we had about three or four, I guess, around the office that was capable of, being put together and used. We had the one we hauled on the truck was a 16-foot ring, and we designed the truck. We had a steel rack built on it that actually went up from the front bumper across top of the cab all the way to the back of the truck, and we were blessed. that we had a four-door crew cab pickup truck here in Atlanta that, we had a nice truck. Barnett actually took care of the guys that was on the road doing the stuff. But we hauled a ring. We put all the metal up on top. And then the only thing we had on the bed of the truck was the boards and the ring ropes and the corner post. And then we had a box built on the back of the truck to put the padding in. So we had a nice setup here. But we also had a couple of rings that broke down into 8-foot sections. Put together, it was a 16-foot square. But it was these were designed by Eddie Smith, who Jerry knows was Eddie Smith was one of those people that could take a Timex watch apart and make it tick again. He was slow. He did it at his own pace, but he could do anything. He's one of those kind of people. And he designed a couple of rings that broke down into 8-foot pieces that you could actually load that whole ring into the bed of a pickup truck. And we used it sometimes. It was a booger. You had twice as many pieces, so we didn't like to use it unless we absolutely had to. But we had several kinds of ring. We had some that was low, that could be used for TVs. And then we had some that was high for the flat National Guard armories and those kind of places. So we had a wide variety around here we could use.
How many guys would they send to the town to put the ring up?
Our ring crew, when I started doing it, when I went to work for Marnette, when I went to work for Gunkel, there was three of us. Me and Larry Nichols and Charlie Smith's brother Jack Smith was the ring crew for Gunkel Enterprises. And the three of us would put the ring up. One of us would sell programs. One of us would keep time. Then they found out I could do ring announcing, and I became the ring announcer on all the spot shows. And we were sort of like the circus. We were just dealing with one ring, though. We were kind of a self-contained traveling around troop. And then we went when I came to work for Barnett. It was myself, and then they let me hire Randy, and Randy traveled with me. And then on certain occasions, we had the guy that we call Red. He would go with us. And then after I backed out and kind of went into the office, was when Scrappy's dad was hired, Charlie McGowan, and he became head of our ring crew. And him and Red and Randy traveled together quite a bit.
You got to realize too the hours that they put in. Being not just driving to the towns, but they were the first ones at the building, had to set everything up, last ones, because they had to wait for the matches to be done, the people out of the building, then they had to tear down, load up, and they were the last ones to leave town.
Yeah, no kidding. They put in some hours, buddy.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd go to these towns, if it's, you know, spot show at a high school or some local place that you went to kind of regularly, there would always be the guys there that wanted to help, and you never turned the help down. You get them in free if they'd help you put it up, and they'd all promise to help you take it down. And, of course, as soon as the show's over, you can't find them. So you're back to yourself.
I still deal with that. Another guy in Charlotte that, Klondike Bill over there, he hauled the ring for forever. I mean, once he stopped working, he went to work as the ring crew. And, I mean, he was the one that brought us here to Kingsport every other week. And they ran towns. Some of their jumps were pretty far, too. You know, coming out of the Carolinas up to Roanoke, then down to here. And they probably at the building by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and they're not getting out there till probably 11:30 or midnight. And on Sundays, they had two towns, And people just, they don't realize the work that went in there. Sandy Scott's another guy, he did so much in office, and Johnny Weaver and Wally Dusick making sure the publicity's out, the towns are running, and people have no idea what goes into running a town.
They have no idea.
They just think, well, hey, there's wrestling, there's the ring, and the wrestlers come in, and for the guys that were, checking up the towns and making sure everything ran right, they had to be a babysitter and a father figure and everything else, and there's a lot of pressure.
In the end, that's what got me. That was the straw that broke my back. It got to the point I won't call names, but if you go back to the era, the December of 83 when I finally said that's enough, if you look at who was here, I equated it with running a daycare center for adults. Book guys on airplanes, pay their trans, rent cars for them, give them a day. We were giving them money to eat on every day. They were making more money than the government doing these tours, and yet they're driving cars down railroad tracks. They're missing planes. You know, I mean, just it got to – that's the part that got me. That's what finally got me. I just said, I can't do this anymore. You know, it was just a people wanted
to really
people, there's been a couple of guys wrote books that you know that I've read or skimmed through that said, you know, oh well, we did this and we didn't like this person and we hated this person, and you know, we were offered to be a booker here, we were offered this there, you know, but we didn't want to do that. You know, a lot of guys just wanted to play the game, they didn't want any responsibility, and my wife's here going, you know, they didn't respect themselves, how could they respect anybody else? And
they
that's the gospel truth. Gospel truth.
And so many of them I have no, you know, I have no feelings for or use for. They made what they were making more money than they ever dreamed and took advantage of it.
Yeah. There were another conversation that came up at the table. We were just kicking it around again, Les Thatcher, and there were some guys from Alaska that run a promotion there, and we were talking. It was just guys, even today, and it started a little bit back when in the 80s when I finally got out, but guys would show up at the towns, flip flops, muscle shirts, sweatpants. Just, you know, I would no more have thought of showing up for a town dress like that than I would have, went naked. My wife's whispering in my ear. I mean, I had more respect for me and more respect for my business than to ever do that. Even when I put the ring up, I took a shower and changed clothes before people got there. Even if I was refereeing. I mean, I couldn't. You know, but it was just different time, different era. I think we just respected the business more.
That's for sure.
You know.
Go ahead, Bobby.
Well, I was just going to say, another set of people that never got the, you know, maybe we didn't think about, you know, was these local sponsors that you would set up. You know, you had to be careful when you set up or picked a sponsor to sponsor a wrestling match, because you were basically allowing them to assume the identity of your business, whether it was the JCs or a private individual or whoever. When they started advertising your product, they became your product because they were the people on the front line advertising your business. And I know we love working with local JC group. JCs were wonderful people to work with back in the day because they took pride in their local communities and they were trying to raise money for various projects they had going on. But we love working with JCs. We worked with some, you know, Mr. Ward worked with the Noonday Optimist Club in Macon, Georgia. They were the regular sponsor for Tuesday night matches in Macon for years. That was another thing that people, I guess, we neglected or didn't think that much about. But you had to be careful who you entrusted your business with, because I always equated it with your insurance agent. If you got life insurance, you don't know who's running Mutual of Omaha. But old Fred Jones, your local representative that knocks on your door and collects your money every month, he is the insurance company to you.
That's true.
So you had to be careful who you entrusted your business with back then. That was another thing that a lot of people took for granted.
Another one is the security that was in the towns, whether it was the local police or somebody that worked for the office that made sure that you got your butt to the dressing room without getting stabbed or shot or whatever. You know, and I know when I worked in Memphis, Buddy Wayne had a couple of guys that traveled with him, and you knew when if something happened in that town, they were going to be right there to help you. That's kind of a reassuring fact, you know, when you're coming out of that ring in a small armory that's full of people, and you got to walk 30 or 40 feet through the middle of them to get to the dressing room.
We never had any local guys that traveled with us for security. We generally always depended on the local police officers. Some of them were very good, and some of them were very bad. I mean, I'm sure like the rest of you, you've come out of the ring and that dressing room looked like it was 3 miles away, and the police would be standing over against the wall laughing, thinking it was funny. And then I've been times where, you know, you've been right in the middle of that, and you turn around, and there's three guys around you, and they're right there with you. So.
Yeah, another thing that, you know, you look at all the guys that was hauling the rings or making sure the towns were running, getting the publicity out and everything else, they didn't have the cell phones or the internet or anything else to get back a hold of the office. And especially the guys pulling the ring, if they broke down at night, the boys are already long gone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're out there by themselves.
Yeah, they had. I wouldn't have wanted that job.
Could you imagine breaking down coming from Topeka to Kansas City?
Oh, you please. You'd still be out there.
I mean, it just the walk to get to the... To get to a phone would take you to daylight, probably, you know. And I mean, I was thinking about all this today. I mean, people do not realize that, and the danger that they were put in. You know, you imagine blowing out a tire on the ring truck. You know, you're going to take that truck right with it. There's so many dangers that they looked at every day. They probably never even thought about it on a daily basis out there, but.
Probably didn't.
I mean, so much could have went wrong.
I'll give you a funny story about stuff going wrong with the ring. This was a Scrappy McGowan. He was just starting to haul a ring truck. You know, he took over and drove the ring truck some after I had come off the road and went in the office. And him and Randy were going to make a town one night, and they were on Terra Boulevard in Atlanta. Anybody's ever been on Terra Boulevard in Atlanta? That's 1941 going toward Griffin. It was back years ago, it was the only way to go to Griffin. It was a four-lane road, had red lights traffic lights every 300-400 feet. I mean, it was a very busy road. And Scrappy hit the brakes on the truck one night. They were going down that road, and when he hit the brakes, one of those 16-foot metal cross pieces on top of the truck busted through the front of the truck. It broke the front little barrier that held it on, and this rail slid off about 8-9 feet off the front of the truck. It sat down and it busted the rear windshield or rear window out of a car in front of them. The spare tire, which laid on top of the truck, came off the truck and it rolled down. Randy said it rolled maybe 300-400 yards, did a U-turn and started back up the road. Well, they got out of the truck and they walked up, and the guy was, I think they said it was a Camaro or something. The guy's in front of the truck and the bar had hit. So he walked up there and he told the guy, said, "Oh man," said, "I'm sorry," said, "it busted through," and blah 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 blah. And said the guy was up there and he reached up and he took this metal bar out of the back of his truck, and he said he helped push it back up on the truck, and he goes, "No harm, no foul." Jumped in his car and took off. Never called, didn't want to call the police, nothing. Just, no, we're okay, we're good. I told him, I said, either he had the car stolen, he had no insurance, or he was illegal. He didn't want no, you just,
yeah.
Fortunately, hit the right person.
Got something fishy about that.
Yeah, could you imagine a lawsuit you'd have now?
Oh, jeez.
Broke my neck, broke my back, my arm's about to fall off. I mean, you know, they would have come out of the woodworks to sue the office nowadays.
Yeah, and we had on the side of our ring truck, we had the Georgia Championship logo plastered on the door. I mean, people knew who we were. It wasn't a secret as to what we were hauling. So it was yeah, he just that guy, they said that guy jumped in that car and he took off.
Oh. Who do you remember in other territories that you worked that helped take care of everything? Make sure everything was running smoothly.
Well, you know, I never hung around those offices much. I don't know. I mean, I was trying to think. God, in Charlotte, they had so many people in Charlotte. My God. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
You know, they were running three towns a night.
Yeah.
And they'd be scattered out. So they had to have three ring crews.
Yeah. What about Sandy Moore out in Portland? I know he held the ring, refereed, and promoted the towns.
Yeah, Sandy worked hard. Yeah, and of course Don Owens, he didn't live in Portland. He lived in where'd he live? Eugene. I think he lived in Eugene, Oregon. He didn't live in Portland. I don't know where they. Of course, they had a office there in the arena, so I guess Sandy actually did it.
Yeah.
Sandy was a good guy.
I know he had, when I was out there, when I went out there a few summers ago, was just out there vacating. I got booked for Lynn Denton a few times. He had the rings that that Sandy had. You know,
what's
said
Lynn
Sandy,
doing
and I mean,
now?
He managed Piper's Pits, those the oil change places, and then I think they've shut those down. I'm not sure what he's doing now. You know, I see that he's still involved. They've started the TV show there in Portland again. They got Portland Wrestling back on the Channel 12, and I saw where he was doing a commercial for it, him and Piper, to promote it.
Really?
So, yeah, so they're trying to they run some towns out there and trying to do something with it. But that was the two most notable names that I saw on what they've got going on out there right now.
God, that was a great place. I loved it.
It's beautiful out there.
Oh, I love
it. That's another one. You leave that, you know, going out to the Dalles and out through there, when you leave Portland, that's some long hauls with a whole lot of nothing in between you. A lot of stuff.
No, no doubt about that now.
Yeah. I mean, just the animals out there that could eat you that come out of that wilderness you pull off the side of the road.
It was it was a great place. I loved it. I really did. Yeah, also I knew Lynn was out there, but I didn't know if he was still there or not.
He told me when I sat there with him, he said that he was supposed to go for 6 months. He promised to me when he left Dallas, he said, I'll go to Portland for 6 months, and he said, I'm coming back to Dallas. And he never left. He got there and he just fell in love with it and he stayed. And that was 1987, so he's been there 26 years now.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's a great guy. He was another one there. He went there to book. I mean, he helped run the towns and make sure everything was going and running with Sandy. And, it's not a... People hear promoters' names and they think, well, you know, that's a one-man job. They don't realize it's just like you was talking about Charlotte. You running, you know, 21 towns a week, you know, the workforce you got to have behind that.
Oh, yeah, those guys, I was there, and you may not see them for 3 or 4 months.
Wow. Yeah, that's... Bobby, what did Ronnie West do? I mean, what was like a daily routine for what he had to do in the office?
Monday mornings, we opened the office at 9 o'clock, so we were always there between 9 and 9:30. We just, again, go over he was responsible for making sure everybody was where they needed to be for the week. Well, Friday was the day we put the booking sheet out for the following week. So let's go to Friday. Friday was me and him. He kept a book. He got the information from Ole. Ronnie kept a book, and then I kept a book as well. We had three copies of it. My copy was the one that I used for making payroll, the one I used for knowing what towns were running, There was never any big board or anything in the office. It was always either in Ronnie's book or my book. And the booking sheet in Atlanta was something that Ole brought down from Charlotte. It was just one sheet of paper, and we'd list all the towns and everywhere you were supposed to be for the whole week, including TVs. And we'd put that out on Friday nights in the dressing room for guys to write their bookings down and see where they were supposed to be. We'd also have them at the TV station on Saturday mornings. Ronnie was responsible for making sure those were right. He followed through on the – he was responsible for making sure that we had guys for TV. If we needed guys to come in and do jobs, he coordinated with Mike Jackson or with a Nashville office or wherever we needed to get guys from. That's where they came in from. He was responsible for that. He would a lot of times in the towns, Ole would might take care of the main events if he was there as far as setting him up or whatever, but he would leave it up to Ronnie to take care of the first three or four matches up to the semifinal or wherever. He checked up to the towns. He brought money back from the towns. He was responsible for being at the TV station on Tuesday mornings when we did interviews to insert into the tapes that were making the loop around the territory. You name it, he did it. Even things that probably wasn't his responsibility, he assumed them to make sure that the things got done right. And there was a lot of times he made those tours up north just to coordinate everything that was going on because somebody had to be on the ground in those places. And let's face it, Ole wasn't going, and I couldn't go because I had to be here. And being real honest, I didn't want to go. So,
real important fact you hit on there, and you did this too, carrying the money from the towns to the office.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine, you know, in the world we live in now, somebody knew. Somebody was leaving an armory or a civic center or, you know, whatever with a bag full of money. You know, even then. I mean, it's just a lot of risk.
You know, when we used to bring it back, I mean, it was, I've told the story over here before about coming out of Athens that night and getting stopped by that cop. You know, I had $3,000 in cash that night in a brown paper sack. I mean, Tip Allman would bring me a brown paper sack full of money in Athens on Thursday when I was there to bring back to the office. On the weekends, if we ran towns on Saturday night, the towns where it was Griffin or Carrollton, which was our two regular towns, you know, and they weren't huge towns, but, you know, on a good crowd, you would bring back $1,700, $1,800, $2,000 in cash, you know, and then we would bring that money home, and we'd have it all weekend here in our homes because we didn't go to the office until Monday. Later on, when the tours got big up north where we were doing big houses every night, and when I say big houses, you know, we would, you know, maybe you had, you know, if you ran a huge town like Columbus, Ohio, you may have, you know, $16,000, $18,000 you're bringing back to the office or more. We started going to the bank. We would set up accounts in those towns to deposit the money into an account up there. And then we could write a check against that account and deposit it here in Atlanta because even back then, that was a lot of money to be hauling around. And you're right, if anybody had ever found out, and that was another thing we did, we would sometimes Ronnie would get it, sometimes I would get it, sometimes Jerry Briscoe after he started running some towns, or Les Thatcher, or as different people began to help run those tours back then, we tried to mix it up. I wouldn't even go to the same bank every day here in Atlanta when I would make the deposits for the office. Some days I'd go downtown, some days I'd go to a branch across town. I tried very hard not to set up a routine where somebody could pick up on it.
Yeah. Well,
they got scrappy. They got Scrappy one time, and they got Randy one time. So.
Oh wow.
Randy, we used to have 1,300 dollars worth of change for Friday night in Atlanta, combination of $1 bills and quarters to make change at the auditorium because the ticket prices were $3.50, $5.50. We'd made them that half dollar. So we would call the bank, order the change. They would get it ready for us, again, put it in brown paper sacks. And Scrappy or Randy would go down a lot of times, or myself, and walk in, give them a check, and pick the change up. Randy was on the way back to the office one Friday with that change, and he stopped at a traffic light, and he heard something start hissing, and he turned over his right shoulder to see what he could see, and he didn't see anybody. And when he turned back to the left, there was a guy standing there with a pistol up against his head, and said, "I'll take the money now." And what they had done, one guy had slipped up on his right side, stuck a knife in his tire, and he limped. He was probably less than a half mile from the office. He just limped back to the office on a flat tire. Told us what happened. Well, there's nothing you can do. You're never going to recover that cash. So we just cut another check and started over.
So you mentioned Les Thatcher. That's another guy that does not get enough credit for laying out the TVs, promoting towns, doing the weekly programs in Knoxville. He did the Mid-Atlantic magazines in Charlotte. I mean, he did a lot of stuff that people, hear, they think, he wrestled and he hosted the TV show. They don't realize he's the one that laid that TV out and put it together and took the cameras during the week and did those personality profiles and had something new and original every Saturday on TV. And still made the towns every night.
Yeah, Les was very innovative in his ideas for TV. And Fuller had the foresight to give him some freedom up there in Knoxville to create something new and exciting. And, his ideas, Les's ideas became sort of the standard that everybody went by. But you're right, he got very little credit for those things.
Yeah.
Just to carry that a little step further, Bo, just the TV guys in the territories. I mentioned Bill Kirshner. I never had the privilege of working with Bill, but I learned a couple of years ago about I think wrestling was on every Thursday night out there, but he had his catchphrase was, "Hello, wrestling fans," but he stretched it out over, and Jerry knows this far more than me, but he would stretch it out over a 20, 30-second intro. Just those three words, "Hello, wrestling fans." And, the guy in Macon, we make fun of the guy in Macon, but that guy down there, his catchphrase was "people, people." And I never quite understood it, but.
But it got over, didn't it?
It got over. "Hello, people, people." And I was like, that was his deal. The wrestling business was a machine within itself, and as long as everything went well, you didn't think much about it. But if one part didn't get enough oil and it began to squeak a little bit, it could bring the whole thing to its knees.
All the wheels fell off. Guy Coffey's another guy in Memphis that, when I was there, he was, and he had started as the manager of Ellis Auditorium. So, that tells you how far back that he went, and he was still working. After he retired from the city in the Ellis Auditorium, he worked there for the wrestling office. He was still there in the 90s when I was there, making sure publicity was out, doing the merchandise in the towns. He was the one that brought us our paychecks and booking sheets every week. They got to have a love for it the same way that we do. They had to have a passion to keep going and promoting towns and just to put up with all the headaches and all the stuff that they had to deal with. They had to have their own drive for it.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Me and Bobby, we laugh all the time about, it's a sickness. The wrestling business is a sickness. And you got it, you can't get it out of you. You're going to keep it in you all of your life. And no matter what you did, from putting the ring up to working, to refereeing, to ring announcing, to ringing the bell, or whatever it is, you had to have a love for it.
You sure did. There's no doubt about that.
There's no other normal people that's going to go and make town 7 days a week, no matter what they're doing. Most people want to be at home every evening. We about 7 o'clock, our gears change. We're almost bell time. Everything's going. The people's coming in the doors. know, and then that's a high that you're on to keep you to get home. And it's just, I don't know if there's really that love and drive and passion for like it was.
I don't think it is.
No. And, you know, I'm getting ready to find out with a few people how much love and passion they got. But, you know, it's you got to want it. I mean, we all grew up being fans and loving it. And you know, it's if you ask somebody, why do you want to be in wrestling? Well, if they have an answer, then they've got the wrong answer. We can't explain why we wanted to do it. We were meant to do it. It was part
meant
of
to
us.
Do it.
Yeah. It's, we can't give that answer of, well, for this reason or that reason. I mean, you look at all of us, we all, from our childhood, were set up to follow that path and do that. And it's not for everybody.
No, it's not.
And I mean, and even the other jobs that we talk about, it's not for everybody. Not everybody can ring announce. Not everybody can put videos together or lay out a TV. You know, a lot of them probably think they can until they get the opportunity. You know. And like Bobby said, one time is all it takes. You know, put a bad ring announcer in the town. But, you know, it don't take long for the people to get upset about that. They can't hear the guy, or he's making mistakes, or whatever. You know, put somebody in the town to sell programs that don't know how to hustle. See, if they ain't bringing the money back from the programs and the pitchers, you know, they're not going to last long. And
one of the guys that we've had on this show is George Shire. George was recognized this year by Call Fire Alley as he got the Jim Melby Historian Award. And me and him were talking one afternoon. We were sitting out there, and me and him were talking, and he developed a love for our business as a historian, as a fan, and he said it was just something he pursued. And he said he's got a room in his house, and he reminded me of you, Bo. I mean, you guys are on the same scale here. He said he's got a room, and he says pictures from floor to ceiling. He said just his wife, he had his wife with him, and they've been married for 40 years, and she was laughing. She said, you know, she said the first date they ever went on, he took her to a wrestling match. And George told me, he said, I knew if she didn't like it, we wouldn't be, you know, there would be no need in pursuing that relationship because this was part of what I was. This is part of who I am. He said he's got file cabinets with folders on guys where he's followed their careers. He's got programs that he swapped. And he said he's just got a room full of stuff. And he said a friend of his came over to his house and looked at this room and went, what do you do with this stuff? And he says, I couldn't answer him. He says, this is just who I am. And I think that's true of all of us in this, but it's just who we are. However crazy it is, however unexplainable it is, it's just who we are. And I, for one, am so thankful that the good Lord allowed me to go down this path. Because I just, we've talked about it so many times. If I was younger, it was like it was, and the same opportunities presented itself, I would pack my bag and be gone again.
You know you would.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you look at guys, I was telling you the other night, Bobby, on the phone, like Gypsy Joe. Joe still goes to towns everywhere. You look at Charlie Smith, he still goes to towns. I mean, they're going to go to towns as long as they're on this earth.
Yes.
Just because that's in them. That's what makes them up. You know, Joe's deal, he just wants to see the people, just talk to the people. That's why he goes. I mean, it's now his sociable time, but he's at somewhere where he's got people he can talk to about what he knows. You know, and that's it's just part of our DNA. It's part of our makeup. You know, and just like talking about, you know, I got the room here. You know, that's what people ask me, same thing. What do you do with this stuff? I sit here and look at it. That's what I do with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's my childhood. You know, I relive it. It's everywhere I've been. I take a piece of something from everywhere I go. And you know, I want to, if I live to be 100 years old, I'll sit here and look at it when I'm 100 years old. You know, we got our memories.
Yep, that's all we got. Well, gentlemen, I'm going to have to go, guys.
All right, Jerry.
My silence
is... being here with... So, thanks for being back with us this week.
Yes, sir, Bobby, and I'm glad you got back safe, bud.
Thank you, sir. It's good to hear from you. Glad you're feeling a little better anyway.
Yeah. I'll see you guys next week.
All righty. Good night, Jerry.
Take care, guys.
All righty.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, Bobby, before we get ready to close here, I told you last night when I called you, I'm going to tell everybody listening, I got the proof for my second book yesterday, and it looks better than I thought it would look. So I'm real pleased with it. So if you haven't read the first book, I got it for sale on the website, kingofkingsport.com. The second book's on sale now. If they buy the book before 10 o'clock Sunday night, they get the DVD that comes along with it. And you don't have to read the first book to read the second one. You can read them out of order or whatever, but, you know, it's just this book is a collection of stories of just 25 years in the wrestling business. It's the stuff we're talking about right here, from dressing room fights to drunk midgets to... anything else that we have experienced in our lifetime that most normal people would never believe actually happens.
Bo is my friend, and even though we're he's here, I'm not actually blowing smoke. But I'll tell you, the first book, when I started reading it, I could not put it down. There again, it may be part of the sickness, but. It's absolutely hilarious, and it's also very sad because there's a lot of parts of this business that we so believed in that other people didn't. They're just trying to take advantage of us for what we are and who we were. But yeah, anybody that enjoys this business, you need to check this book out. I promise you, you won't regret it.
And you even get a picture of Bobby Simmons in the second book.
Oh, goodness.
it took longer. I mean, you know, I started working on this thing, and I there were six or seven chapters that didn't even go into this book because they just didn't fit. So I've actually got to start on a third book if we get that far. But, you know, it's something George South talked about it when he was on here a few weeks ago. You know, you write these things and turn them over to somebody to help you put them together, and you worry about it. Then you see it and you go, man, this is better than I thought it was going to be. And then the worry comes of, is anybody going to buy and read this thing? But, you know, my first book did real well. This one, it's got stuff that'll make you laugh. It'll make you cry. It'll just entertain you. It's just a collection of many short stories of things that happen when you spend 200 days a year on the road. And, you know, it's just... You know, I heard a guy say the other night he bought a book from somebody for $40, and the guy said, I can't believe you paid $40 for the book. And the guy said, I'm not buying the book, I'm buying his life. What took him that many years to live? I'm going to read it in 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got 215 pages, I think it is, of just funny short stories and some stuff that will entertain people. Go to kingofkingsport.com. We were supposed to have Jimmy Valiant on here tonight, and between me and him, we forgot Las Vegas was going on this week, and he didn't get home until tonight. So I'm going to call Handsome tomorrow and make sure he's here next week, because he's got a 49th anniversary of his first match coming up. The 1st of May, he's got a special event. We're going to talk a little bit about that, talk about his career. And what do you got going on the rest of the week, Bobby?
Well, I'm off. I don't go back to the real world and my real job until Monday. So, or Sunday. I'll be back in church Sunday. But I had a chance to talk to Jimmy over the last couple of days out in Vegas, and he's looking forward to being on the show. And for anybody that's never met him or ever actually had the privilege of sitting and talking to him, man, this guy's a walking encyclopedia, and you will enjoy. You will enjoy some of the stories. He presented the Mike Mazurki Award to Ivan Koloff last night. And he can relate this far better than me. But he told the story last night, and I laughed till I cried. He said when him and Ivan were working their program around the Charlotte territory in the 70s or 80s, he said Ivan was in such great shape. And he said, man, Ivan would go in, and he said, He said for the evidently Ivan was the TV champion, and the way the deal was, you had to beat him within 20 minutes, or the title didn't change hands. He said so for, he said for like 30 or 40 weeks they did 20 minute Broadways every night, 7 days a week, sometimes twice a day, everywhere they went. And he said Ivan would get in and start calling spots, and he said by about 10 minutes into the match, he said he was sucking wind so bad, and he said he swears this is the truth. He said he would take Ivan's hand and rake his own eye just so Ivan would shut up and quit calling these outlandish spots so he could start selling and catch his breath.
Well, they what a hot run they had. They had a whole year in Charlotte, one full year of just those two guys. They were some guys that had some good runs of, you know, a few weeks, few months, but a full solid year they had with each other in Charlotte.
Yeah,
and they did every kind of coal miner match, chain match, I mean, street fight. They did everything, and they grew money in the same towns week after week after week.
Yep.
You know, like you said, he's got so many funny stories, and so he'll be on here with us next week, and we're going to talk to him about that, talk about his museum and Hall of Fame that he's got in Virginia, which I recommend to anybody that's a wrestling fan to make the trip there at least once. You could go there five times and still not see everything that he's got. He's got five full buildings full of memorabilia, pictures, programs, stuff that the boys that he worked with over the years have sent him to hang up in there. I mean, he's got a tremendous museum there in Charlottesville, and he opens it up every Sunday for 4 hours, and it's free to go look at it. So it's well worth the trip to the Roanoke area, no matter where you're coming from. So. Well, Bobby, I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up here next week and let you get some sleep. And we'll be back here next Thursday night, and we'll do it all over again.
Sounds good, man. Good show
all
tonight.
Right.
Enjoyed it, and good to be home. I'm going to bed.
Yeah. All right, I'll call you tomorrow.
All right, good night.
All right, bye.